This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Workers are fast losing confidence in the willingness and the capacity of the ANC to honestly fight corruption.
That's the leader of South Africa's most powerful union federation on the president's most recent move to crack down on corruption related to the fight against COVID-19. Details coming up also. In Guinea, President Alpha Conde has accepted his party's nomination to run for re-election in October. And a Kenyan journalist detained in Ethiopia has been released. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. In South Africa, the top six members of the ruling African National Congress say party members charged with corruption must step aside from all official positions. In the latest scandal to hit the ANC, several senior officials allegedly plundered funds allocated to battle COVID-19. Darren Taylor reports.
The country's most powerful worker federation, the Congress of South African Trade Unions, or COSATU, says it's sick of what it calls the ANC's rotten soul. It says it'll be happy when the ruling party stops talking and allows the justice system to jail the criminals within its ranks.
Workers are fast losing confidence in the willingness and the capacity of the ANC to honestly fight corruption.
Bheki Ntshali-Ntshali is COSATU's leader. At every election since South Africa became a multiracial democracy in 1994, the labor movement has delivered millions of votes to the ANC. But, says Ntshali-Ntshali, if the ANC doesn't turn propaganda into a purposeful purge of its corrupt officials, COSATU will reconsider its support.
It does not help for the ANC to issue statement for condemnation regarding the state of corruption while reinstating people implicated in the VBS looting scandal and also promoting former mayors facing corruption allegation to higher position.
Someone who knows the ANC well is a man who fought the party for two decades in parliament, former opposition leader Tony Leon.
And I think Cyril Ramaphosa has to some extent create a rod for his own back when he announced a few weeks ago that he preferenced the unity of the ANC over all other considerations, including the fact that he's perceived, I think quite correctly, as being weak and indecisive.
Ramaphosa's since stated that the interests of the ANC do not stand above the interests of the country. What's needed now, says Leon, is for the president to back this up by firing allies accused of corruption, even if it means he loses support within his party.
If he took a bolder view and was prepared to act and say, well, these are going to be the consequences and I'm going to accept them and face them, and they might be very dire, but I've got a much greater national problem to deal with than the party problem, then he would actually be able to get out of a trap to an extent, not entirely of his own making.
One of the senior ANC members implicated in the latest wave of graft is former Durban mayor, Zandile Gumede. Yet the ANC recently promoted her to the KwaZulu-Natal Provincial Parliament. Leon says Ramaphosa should begin his war on corruption by scrapping Gumede's appointment.
Then you will actually see a decisive move of what is obviously the most visible and to most South Africans, I think, appalling manifestation of talking tough but acting soft. I think that would be a very necessary first step. An enormous amount of credibility would be restored.
Leon's convinced if the ANC is to restore its credibility, Ramaphosa will have to gamble and get rid of the corrupt elements dragging it down.
There are plenty of other parties which have said, well, unity above all else, and they over time just ceased to exist because of the inherent contradictions or the catch-22s that start to ensnare them at all levels. So I think something's got to give in this. If Cyril Ramaphosa's going
Leon's not alone among observers in his belief that events over the next few months will define Ramaphosa's presidency and perhaps begin a new chapter in South Africa's political history. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
The highest decision-making body in South Africa's ruling African National Congress has instructed the party and government to send another delegation to Zimbabwe to pursue solutions to its ongoing crisis. President Cyril Ramaphosa says the envoys he sent earlier did not meet all stakeholders because President Emmerson Mnangagwa wanted a plan for enlarging all stakeholders in the process. Ramaphosa says his country is compelled to help as it already is dealing with the impact of the crisis. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
After a meeting of the ANC's National Executive Committee, Ramaphosa told reporters the NEC has decided to send a party delegation to engage their ZANU-PF counterparts on the crisis.
The Secretary General will be finalizing the delegation that will be going to Zimbabwe in days. A deep desire that when they get there, they should have an opportunity of meeting other stakeholders in Zimbabwe, that we get as broad a view of what is happening in Zimbabwe.
Ramaphosa stated that his country is already starting to feel the pinch of the crisis next door.
We are having to deal with a situation on our borders. We are continuing to feel them on our border, and it's important that as neighbors we're able to discuss these types of matters so that we see the extent to which we can be supportive of one another in whatever shape or form.
The ANC's move has been welcomed by many who have long criticized South Africa's quiet diplomacy on Zimbabwe. Trust Ndlovu is South Africa's chairperson of Zimbabwe's largest opposition party, the Movement for Democratic Change Alliance.
The effort is commendable, and we just hope that it will yield good results. Although I'm a bit cautious and skeptical on the negotiation of the ANC and the ZANU-PF, because that will only serve to strengthen their friendship. One would wish if President Ramaphosa had sorted some kind of a mandate from the AU.
Kennedy Mandaza, the ZANU-PF spokesperson in South Africa, also welcomed the move.
We feel that such engagements are necessary and are informed by the economic relations that subsist between Zimbabwe and South Africa. Hence, it is imperative for South Africa to have an in-depth understanding of the challenges so that whatever decision they take to help Zimbabwe is well informed.
However, political analyst Somadoda Figeni says party-to-party engagements will not make the desired impact.
I would rather trust the state-to-state approach. And where South Africa might think it could also have awkwardness, they may use the SADC infrastructure, because in this particular case, party-to-party arrangement may not even have the credibility where they may want to talk to the opposition parties.
Ramaphosa admitted that nothing much was achieved by the first delegation he dispatched. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
The man portrayed in the film Hotel Rwanda as saving the lives of more than 1,200 people from the 1994 genocide has been arrested on terrorism and other charges. Paul Rusesabagina has become a strong critic of President Paul Kagame and his government, calling for armed resistance in a YouTube video. His adopted daughter, Karine Kanimba, claims the charges against her father are trumped up and that he was kidnapped while in Dubai. Rwandan and Dubai officials did not immediately comment on the allegation. Rousses Bagina is a Belgian citizen and has been living outside Rwanda since 1996, first in Belgium and then in Texas in the U.S. He was played by Don Cheadle in the Oscar-nominated film Hotel Rwanda, which told how he used his position as a hotel manager and his connections with the Hutu elite to protect Tutsis fleeing the 1994 slaughter in Rwanda. But Kagame and some genocide survivors have disputed Rousses Bagina's account or accused him of exploiting the genocide for commercial gain. Rousses Bagina, whose father was Hutu, but mother and wife were Tutsi, has denied exaggerating his role. In Guinea, President Alpha Conde has accepted his party's nomination to run for re-election in October, taking advantage of a new constitution to seek a third term that his opponents say is unconstitutional. Nicolas Pinault has more.
The ruling Rally of the Guinean People, RPG, nominated Conde earlier this month to represent it in the October 8 poll. At the time, Conde said he took note of the nomination but stopped short of formally accepting it. However, in a short statement read last night on national television, the RPG and its allies said, "We have the immense privilege and joy of informing the Guinean population that he has granted our request. President Alpha Condé will be our candidate. Guinea's opposition is vowing to return to the streets. It is now clear even to the most skeptical that Mr. Alpha Condé, who claims to have fought for decades for democracy in Guinea, is known other than the biggest disappointment in the political history of our country," the National Front for the Defense of the Constitution said in a statement. Condé, now 82, pushed through a revamped constitution this year that opponents say was crafted to reset the term counter, enabling him to run again. Nicolas Pinault, VOA News, Paris.
Cameroon marked African Traditional Medicine Day Monday, cautioning its population against quacks trying to make money, especially during the coronavirus pandemic. Authorities say while some traditional medicines have a proven medical use, many fake healers are looking to scam those who cannot afford modern medicine. Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from Yaoundé.
A so-called African traditional healer uses a loudspeaker to entice passers-by. He says people who have not found solutions to their health problems in hospitals should come to him. Cameroon authorities say there are more than 800 traditional healers in the capital, Yaoundé. The Cameroon Association of French-speaking healers says nationwide there are at least 19,000. Healer Nadej Avulu accepts chickens as consultation fees from patients who do not have money. Avulu, who has received 15 chickens in the last day, says she specializes in spiritual healing. She says early signs of spiritual attacks include severe pain on the forehead, nose bleeds, vomiting and fever. Avulu says she helps patients by giving them medicine she prepares from mango, tree roots, and animal skin. 50-year-old farmer Marie Esimbi took her sick son to Avulu. She says her 32-year-old son regained his health and started working on his own after he went through some form of spiritual cleansing. Esimbi says the healer boiled some leaves and grains for her son to drink and wash his face with three times a day. Cameroon authorities say about 70% of its 25 million people depend primarily on African traditional medicine, as many in remote areas cannot access hospitals or afford them. But while some herbal medicines have been shown to have health benefits, many other alleged traditional medicines only help the so-called healers. Divine Teller leads a group of five such healers who claim to have successfully treated patients with COVID-19.
Nous avons des statistiques bien documentées, suivies dans le milieu clinique.
She says she can confirm that 1,000 people who tested COVID-19 positive recovered their health after they were treated with African traditional medicine. Chala says some of those who recovered from COVID-19 were more than 60 years old. Cameroon authorities stress there is no cure for COVID-19 or effective treatment by African traditional medicine. Cameroon Health Minister Manauda Malashi on African Traditional Medicine Day Monday warned against quack healers and their claims.
Comme tout Africain, nous connaissons très bien que les lapins.
Malashi says, like many Africans, he can't undermine the importance of African traditional medicine in saving lives and ensuring general well-being. But he warns it is imperative for successful African traditional healers to organize themselves and help the government to kick out from their midst those charlatans who are damaging the lives of innocent people. In that regard, Malashi says he has ordered a census of prominent and acclaimed African traditional medical practitioners in Cameroon. Malashi said their aim is to root out quacks and stop the illegal business from putting Cameroonian lives at risk. The World Health Organization marks African Traditional Medicine Day to involve verified traditional healers in healthcare services. Shortly after the pandemic reached Cameroon in March, the government began urging those with COVID-19 symptoms to go to hospitals, not to so-called healers. The WHO says Cameroon has over 19,000 confirmed cases of the virus and more than 400 deaths. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Uganda and the United Nations Refugee Agency, UNHCR, have placed one of the largest refugee camps in Africa, Kiangwali, under lockdown after a jump in confirmed cases of the coronavirus. The refugees there say they are feeling the pinch. Halima Tumani reports from Kampala.
Home to more than 120,000 refugees in southwestern Uganda, the Changwali refugee settlement is on lockdown. This is due to a rising number of coronavirus cases among both aid workers and refugees. Rebecca Noel, a Congolese national and mother of two, has lived at the settlement in Chukwube district, southwestern Uganda, for 11 years. To supplement the monthly $6 cash for food money given to her and others by the World Food Program, Noel says she does casual labor and trades in shoes and clothes. With little food to put on the table, Noel says she too could be at risk of contracting the coronavirus. She says life is hard because we are under lockdown and we cannot leave. She also says we may get corona because when you and the children get hungry, as an adult, you could persevere. But when the child cries, you just have to get out and find food so the children don't starve and die. According to a statement by the Ugandan government and UN High Commissioner for Refugees, 40 refugees and humanitarian workers at Changwali have tested positive for the virus that causes the COVID-19 disease, and two refugees have died. Muse Cheru, Uganda's State Minister for Refugees, says with the rising numbers, the settlement dwellers have to manage amid the circumstances.
Critical and life-saving activities continue to take place in the settlement to provide assistance to the most vulnerable. We began local procurement of additional 860,000 reusable face masks for immediate distribution for refugees across the country, especially in Changwali.
Uganda currently has 2,928 cases with 30 deaths, according to the Johns Hopkins University, which is tracking the infection across the globe. Yonat Kundane, the UNHCR social media associate in Uganda, says more than 600,000 face masks have been already produced by refugee tailors and distributed to the communities.
There have been cases of COVID-19 patients there, including death. They are in Uganda, and all the operation procedures that are given by the Minister of Health apply to all people who reside in this jurisdiction we call Uganda. There are certainly going to be difficulties. There are certainly going to be inconveniences, but it is for their own good.
The infections come as the World Food Programme warns of further food ration cuts to refugees in East Africa. In Uganda, the WFP says to provide full rations for 1.2 million refugees in the settlements from now until the end of the year. It needs $47.4 million immediately. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala.
The Kenyan Ministry of Foreign Affairs announced that a Kenyan journalist detained in Ethiopia has been released, but press advocates see the latest crackdown on journalists as a step back for Ethiopia's democratic progress. VOA Salim Salomon has the story.
In an ordeal that lasted more than 2 months, Kenyan journalist Collins Juma Osemo, also known as Yasin Juma, was arrested, faced multiple charges, including inciting violence and plotting to kill senior Ethiopian officials. Juma said he contracted COVID-19 while in custody at a detention center in Addis Ababa. He also said he sustained a broken rib during an altercation with men he believes were security personnel.
All of a sudden, six armed men came with a small van, then they started now beating us. One of us was hit on the wall, and I sustained a broken rib and my back also. We were forced into a vehicle. And they want us not to, like, protest or do anything. They are able to do anything to us.
Fakadu Zaga, the director of the Office of the Attorney General, disputed Juma's account and denied that individuals in custody are mistreated, telling VOA, "That's not how we work." He denied security officials were involved in picking Juma up after he was released on bail. If Juma is truly saying that he has been beaten and experienced harassment, let him formally report it, he said, speaking in Amharic. Juma said he was in Ethiopia on assignment for UK-based Sky News as a producer. He said his own company, Horn 24 Media, was also planning to film a documentary for the Oromo Broadcasting Network, an Ethiopian government affiliate in the Oromia region. He said his experience shows the press in Ethiopia continues to face severe restrictions.
All I can say is that I think maybe the world had celebrated a little bit too early on the perceived changes in Ethiopia.
The Committee to Protect Journalists reports that in the wake of protests following the June 29 killing of popular Oromo singer Hajalu Hundessa, Ethiopia has shut down the internet and accused some media outlets of inciting violence. The government has ordered investigations into media organizations and arrested a total of 4,700 people, according to the Independent Journalism Advocacy Group. For years, rights groups and dissidents have raised concerns about the Ethiopian government's use of anti-terrorism laws to target journalists. Violent unrest in the country and concerns about the role of inflammatory news reports and social media posts in stoking violence contributed to public support for the laws. Zakarias Zalalem is an Ethiopian journalist who writes about the country.
It is of the larger Ethiopian population's belief that something had to be done. There had to be done in to criminalize some of these really insightful media posts.
The concern, Zakarias added, is that the government will overreach.
There is also the well-placed fear that we might go back to what was a very dark era for independent journalism, the pre-2018 era of journalism, which saw legislation used simply to crack down on any sort of internal dissent.
While Juma's ordeal appears to be drawing to a close, questions linger about how existing laws might be used in the future to target journalists. Salim Solomon, VOA News, Washington.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.